must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals. Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Chris Poole, who lives in Tampa and is probably best known for, as he describes it, being owned by feline phenoms Cole and Marmalade. And when we say feline phenoms, we mean this pair, the jet black cat and the orange tabby, are flat-out internet sensations with a combined 3 million followers on their Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube accounts. Some of their videos have been featured on Ellen and other TV shows. In some ways, it makes perfect sense that videos are at the center of the Cole and Marmalade popularity, given that Poole moved from his native England to Tampa more than a decade ago to take a job as a videographer for Big Cat Rescue. We'll hear a bit about his formative years in England, his experiences working for Big Cat Rescue, and various aspects of the Cole and Marmalade juggernaut when I speak with Chris Poole in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, I'll speak with Ornella Varchi, Chief Development Officer of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, who will update us on plans and progress for the building of its new shelter as they enter the final fundraising phase. Speaking of shelters, I suppose I have to mention that my latest piece for the Washington Post animal blog traces the improbable path of a dog named Shelby, who had been living in a landfill in rural Tennessee, was rescued, got adopted, then became the star of the new movie A Dog's Way Home, and then became a therapy dog. You can find this story pretty easily on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, simply searching Washington Post and A Dog's Way Home. See a couple of the programming notes. Next week on Talking Animals, I'll be playing back at least part of the interview I conducted with Temple Grandin earlier this month on stage at a theater in Austin in front of 1,200 folks. We had a really good chat about all kinds of things. More immediately, later today, I'm sitting in for Scott Elliott on the All Souls edition of It's the Music from 2 to 4 p.m. I'll also do a brief interview with Scott himself, a brief phone interview, so it'll be nice to hear his voice on his own show and hear how he's doing. So that's later today, 2 to 4 p.m. right here on WMNF. So, right now, with all those announcements and getting caught up, it's been a couple weeks since we've had a regular show here. Let's now get to our conversation with Chris Poole. By the way, we are streaming this on Facebook Live via my personal page, Duncan Strauss. So if you're anywhere near a computer or a phone and want to check out Facebook, it's on my page. So let's get on to the conversation. If you'd like to join the conversation at any point, you can call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And again, we are streaming the conversation on Facebook Live as well. This is Chris Poole on Talking Animals on WMF. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Or should I say meowning?
Oh, well, there we go. That's the first. I think we should keep a running total of as many
cat puns.
Yeah, as we can. Yeah, for sure. So thanks so much for coming. It's always great to have a guest in studio. It's all too rare on this show, so it's nice. And of course, you've got some surrogate Cole and Marmalades here, so people may be able to see that on their Facebook Live. But anyway, so of course, we'll get to Cole and Marmalade themselves in a moment, but let's first explore the Chris Poole phenomenon before we get to the Cole and Marmalade phenomenon. So obviously, I trust you grew up in England.
Yep, Nottingham. So that's pretty much in the East Midlands, directly in the middle.
Okay. And what did animals mean to you as a kid when you were growing up?
We always had numerous pets. I actually grew up with a black cat.
Okay. What was that cat's name?
Sarah.
Sarah?
So she was my favorite. Cats, dogs, guinea pigs, rabbits.
Oh, wow.
We always had something in the house and, you know, just loved being around them. Love playing with them as kids and just pretty much, well, as I grow up now, I'm a grown-up now, classed as a grown-up anyway.
Okay.
I actually, you know, I like cats and dogs better than people in most cases.
But, yeah.
But, growing up with them, just always got good memories about them. And
did you ever do any work with them or even volunteering with them anywhere locally as you were a kid or even a young adult there?
No. That all started in America.
Okay. Yep. So let's get into then the parallel story, because it sounds like how that happened was really becoming a videographer. So when did that first happen back in England?
I actually interned at Big Cat Rescue in 2006. So that's where you come over for 90 days, you live on the property, you do everything, you clean the enclosures, help prepare the diets for the cats, do enrichment, give tours, do the landscaping. And so I went back home after that, and I was kind of traveling around in between jobs, and then the job vacancy came up in 2008, so I jumped on the chance and then moved to Tampa and lived in a trailer at Big Cat Rescue.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, I guess I hadn't understood that the job was preceded by one of those internships that they have. And they're like, as you've noted, in a way, they're sort of international in terms of appeal and the kind of folks that do come over for a stint. But you just did that because I guess you were interested in hanging out with and working with big cats.
Yeah, exactly. I actually went to college and university for graphic design. So I was artsy and had a good eye for design. And then I just wasn't sure about wanting to sit at a desk all day doing graphic design, you know, brochures for furniture and stuff like that. So I'd always liked animals.
You surely make it sound enticing. That's what, yeah.
And yeah, saw the Big Cat Rescue internship program and thought, you know, 90 days in Florida seems pretty good for a kid from England.
Right. Yeah.
Better weather at least. So yeah, that's what started off my kind of love for big cats. And
but you had no sense then that there would be any professional opportunity. You were just doing because it sounded like some time in Florida from England, yep. Good, and some time with big cats, good, and just a little reprieve from otherwise designing what you may have described as sort of dull flat, you know,
like
brochures
or
yeah.
That.
So once the job became available, I mean, you obviously spent time there, but did it feel like a big leap to take to say, okay, it's one thing to go over for an internship, it's another thing to just sort of pick up and move and live, as you say, in the trailer on the grounds there.
It did, and it didn't. I'd been like traveling around doing various animal stuff. I did some great white shark stuff in Africa and Australia. I'm kind of a shark freak too.
Oh wow.
So myself and my family were kind of used to me and my brothers traveling around, so didn't seem like a big leap. And Florida, there's a lot of British people in Florida too, so it didn't seem like it was like
that exotic or that scary. Yeah,
so seemed kind of natural and exciting, so yeah,
cool. Went for it. Yeah. And by that time, I guess you were already a pretty accomplished videographer. I mean, accomplished enough to get the gig, I guess, right?
Kinda.
Yeah.
I dabbled a bit myself and just learned software myself, but I'd not made that many videos, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of learned as I went.
As you went,
along.
Yeah.
So
they took a little bit of a leap themselves then to hire you, it sounds
like.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like rocket science, I guess.
Right. But obviously they were impressed with you from the internship.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you didn't necessarily have the most longest impressive resume as a videographer. But they said, all right, he's learning videography. We know him from before. We like him. Let's give the guy the job.
It's all about having the experience at Big Cat Rescue, them knowing you and your work ethic, and
you know,
they're willing to take the time to train you up and do your thing.
And then once you were there, although again you'd had this internship, did you have any unease or trepidation about working around and with big cats like that, or was
ready for
it? Like excited, yeah.
It's just I feel it's like a privilege to be around them, and you know, as you know, they've been rescued from oftentimes sad situations, so they're in this sanctuary living the best life possible in captivity. So I thought it was really cool to be a part of that and spread the message about Big Cat Rescue.
So what kind of things were you typically shooting there for Big Cat Rescue?
All sorts. Like the most popular videos are like the enrichment videos. At Halloween, they get pumpkins.
Right.
And if the listeners don't know what enrichment is, it's just a way of their, you know, what's the word? Getting their natural behaviors.
Right. And also not having them just sit around not doing anything and being listless. And
mental stimulation, giving them something to do. So pumpkins at Halloween, they get turkeys at Thanksgiving and Christmas trees and presents at Christmas time.
Yeah.
So those fun big cat play videos were very popular. But then we do all the fun stuff, and then we do the factual stuff about, you know, changing the laws to stop, you know, big cats being kept as pets.
Right.
Which is still crazy to me today. It's still legal in many states. So we're trying to educate the public make a difference and get that message out there.
So you were doing things, clips that would help document the efforts to shore up the legislation,
yeah, exactly,
as well as enrichment things. Yeah. Now, to what extent were you, like, if they went somewhere to rescue a big cat and bring that big cat, or cats plural maybe, to big cat rescue, did you go as well to document that by video?
Yeah, I did. I was lucky enough to go. My first rescue was actually in Mississippi. It was actually a liger and two tigers. A liger is a cross between a lion and a tiger. So weird hybrid that people will try and create, and, you know, take them to roadside malls and circuses because people want to see these weird, you know, kind of freaks
and
of nature.
They want to pet them, right? Yeah, isn't exactly that where the problem is, or
have
one
the
of
photo
the problems
taken? Yeah. So yeah, Mississippi, the guy actually left the property. It was in a residential area. He had a bunch of cages in the backyard. It just, you know, abandoned the property, and one of the former volunteers was going to feed the liger and two tigers. So that was my first rescue in December 2008. Yeah, still just crazy when you drive into a neighborhood, go up to the backyard fence, look through a gap in the fence, and see a tiger staring back at you.
Well, that brings me back to a question I already asked before, but perhaps a slightly different answer, is that it's one thing to be on the grounds of Big Cat Rescue where the enclosures are super secure, and there, yep, I know there's incredible protocols for anybody that would actually have the clearance, if that's the right word, to go in and out of those enclosures. So the safety and everything about the cats not ever getting out is totally protected. But here, you're going where people have just almost abandoned these big cats. Like you say, you're looking through the fence and there they are. Were those worrisome things when you were trying to prepare to shoot those? Or
kind of, but I was younger then too, and okay, kind of bulletproof. But
I see, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just a crazy situation, not only from animal welfare aspect, just public safety.
Like, yeah.
These tigers were in enclosures that were like 8 feet tall, and they had no roofs on them. So,
oh my goodness!
If they really wanted to, they
jump
could have
over.
Got a,
yeah,
could have got out of there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just still insane, and you know, we're making progress, but it's slow. But I think we're going to get there eventually. But yeah, just there's an estimated 10,000 to 20,000 big cats privately owned in America.
Yeah.
Which is just an insane statistic to me.
Right, given how many there are in the wild, yeah, by comparison, which is
3,000 tigers in the wild.
Yeah, a smaller figure by quite a bunch. So, and let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tune in, my guest is Chris Poole, who runs, or is run by, the Coal and Marmalade Juggernaut, and across their social media platforms, these cats have some 3 million followers. So if you'd like to ask Chris a question about Coal and Marmalade or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And if you have just tuned in, then you probably missed that we are streaming this conversation on Facebook Live via my own page, Duncan Strauss, on Facebook, if you'd like to take a look at Chris and his surrogate Coal and Marmalades. They're
very well-behaved cats.
Yeah, they're very quiet and not demanding, and but on the other hand, no purring, so I guess there's a trade-off there. But
they're not walking on the keyboards and wrecking the equipment.
That's right. So, okay, so let's get into, I guess, the coal part of the story, which I believe began while you were still working for Big Cat Rescue.
Yep.
Walk me through coal entering your life.
So coal, we got a call from a friend who found coal at a busy intersection in Tampa in the evening. I'm not sure how she spotted a black kitten when it was getting dark, but
wow,
she did. And she texted us. She knew I worked at Big Cat Rescue. And then we saw the picture, picked him up the next day. We couldn't say no. So we actually lived at Big Cat Rescue with us in the trailer. So we had leopards as neighbors outside. He could look out the window and see leopards in the enclosures. And then I just kind of, you know, filming big cats Monday through Friday, I kept doing the same with coal at the weekends. And then I found out that black cats are the least likely to be adopted and most likely to be euthanized in animal shelters. So, you know, as I just said, I've grew up with a black cat in England.
Yeah.
So they've always been my favorite. Yeah. And when I heard that, I just decided to make videos for my personal YouTube channel and just kind of show people they're just like any other cat. They're just as cool. And the first video we made was 10 reasons to adopt a lucky black cat. And that kind of went viral. So that was cool. It was cool to make a difference for small cats at the weekends in my own time. So I just kept making silly videos and, you know, factual videos to try and change people's perceptions about black cats.
Yeah. So when you made that first one, it sounded like that was kind of like, well, it's just sort of fun. Although having just learned that they're the last to be adopted, and unfortunately, therefore, some of the first to be euthanized at a shelter. But it seemed like it was kind of at that first one, maybe just kind of a whim. Like, it's like, hey, well, let's just give this a shot. My day job is the big cat, so let's do this with this little cat.
Pretty much.
So were you surprised that it got that kind of response?
Yeah, I was, kind of. It was just, as I said, my personal YouTube channel with, less than 100 subscribers. So I thought, what the heck, I'll do it. And then, yeah, to get that response, I was like, oh, yeah, I can do what I've learned at Big Cat Rescue, apply it to small cats, make a difference in that kind of world as well. So just kept doing it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, well, we're going to trace some of that history. Let's get one of our callers involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Chris Poole.
Hi, I'm astounded by the number of tigers and lions, I guess, that are here in this country. Is it legal to bring them in? How do they get into the country in the first place?
They're not often brought into the country. It's normally from what we call backyard breeders. People breed these tigers as cubs, obviously, and they take them to malls and circuses and fairs and charge people to have their photo taken with them and play with tiger cubs or lion cubs. And then once they get too big, they're discarded either into the exotic pet trade or they're even killed for their body parts.
But how do these people get them in the first place? You said it's not illegal to own one, but how do they get them?
They can
buy them from zoos or?
Possibly smaller roadside zoos, but they can also get them online or from exotic animal magazines. There's ads everywhere.
And wow. It's not illegal to own a lion or a tiger?
Depends where you live, right?
Yeah, it's different state by state. And oftentimes, if it is illegal in that state and you're caught with a tiger in your backyard, it just comes down to kind of a slap on the wrist. And, they can move to another state or just get around laws. There's loopholes.
How many states allow the possession of those?
That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly, but it's...
I'm going to guess that Big Cat Rescue, which has a fantastic and rich website, would be a great source to answer that exact question.
Okay, fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. And speaking of exotic, which we sort of veered into in your response to the caller, one of our emailers says, great show today. Could your guest talk about the Joe Exotic debacle? I saw that his zoo in Oklahoma is closing down, and I think he's still in jail for a murder for a hire plot. He's one of the worst examples of an unethical, immoral, exotic zoo owner / manager.
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah.
Not sure how much I should say about him.
That's a full show or two, at least. But
he's basically one of the bad guys. He would breed, exploit his animals. Animals would go missing. Basically, I don't want to get too deep into that stuff, but he's just one of the prime examples of why we should make owning big cats illegal. And just not a good guy. And there's more of them out there than what you'd think.
Yeah, he's pretty high profile. He's been around a long time, and he has, is it Oklahoma or I forget?
Yep.
He has this so-called zoo. And talk about skirting. This is exactly why legislation needs to be firmed up, tightened up, and just more laws need to be added, because he has navigated around those for years and years and to the detriment of all kinds of big cats. And as our emailer alluded to, he's gotten into all kinds of illegal activity, including at least alleged murder for a hire plot. So you can find out more about him if you're inclined. But let's talk about more happy topics like coal and marmalade. So Cole becomes I assume Cole had to stay inside the trailer, given that you were living on the grounds of Big Cat Rescue. Yeah. Wasn't letting that cat out for anything, right? Yeah. Now, was the videographer gig such that you might need to shoot anything at any given moment, so you were kind of required to live on the premise?
Plus, it was free.
It was a good. It was a good thing for a guy just over from England, probably. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It was cool. You go, hear the lions roaring at night. But that's a good point. Always on standby, emergencies or, hey, come out to so-and-so's enclosures. We're going to do enrichment, so I'm there in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So, that's a good point. And then also security, too. Like, New Year's Eve, when there's fireworks going off, we'd drive around in a golf cart checking on the cats, that kind of thing. So there's always somebody on property.
Sure. So was the whole time that you were the videographer there, you were living there as well?
For the first kind of 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So back to smaller cats. So you post this one of Cole, 10 reasons to adopt a lucky black cat. Goes viral. Post another one. Same kind of response. It's like, hey, there might be something here.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
To get that response.
Yeah. And so did you feel like, hey, I'm just going to keep going because the response is surprising, but also it hopefully maybe helps the cause of black cats?
Yeah, exactly. Just, adopt, spay, neuter. It's, I kind of followed the same plan as Big Cat Rescue. We'd do the fun, silly videos, but then we'd do something more substantial with a message or to try and educate people.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was a cool hobby. And then obviously Marmalade came along about a year and a half later.
Yeah, so let's hear about that, because that's its own interesting story. And then, of course, it's something about the two of them that I think accounts for at least a big part of this phenomenon. So how did Marmalade indeed enter that picture?
He came from a friend of a friend. They didn't want him. He was going to be released outside in a feral cat colony or taken to the local shelter. And I kind of had I'd been wanting to get a ginger cat for quite a while. I'd been looking on the Humane Society website. And then when the friend sent us a picture again, it was, meant to be.
It was fate.
So, Marmalade came on the scene and, two cats is better than one. And I definitely agree with that. Like, Cole had somebody to play with. And
so did they hit it off when they were first introduced, or was it a little bit of, hey, who's this guy?
No, because Cole's such a sweet cat.
Okay.
Like, Marmalade terrorized Cole a bit.
Oh, it was the other way around. The interloper is the aggressor. Wow.
But okay. Yeah, they got along pretty much from the get-go. There's obviously videos online.
Yeah.
And then we...
Well, one, I guess, that sort of documented, or approximately, their meeting was when Cole met Marmalade, right? Got a huge response,
yeah.
Right?
That's got, like, millions of views.
Now, I'm sure then and now you've thought about why exactly did that explode like that? Why do you think? Because, by then you'd obviously done the Cole videos. They had gotten nice response, but 2.4 million or something, I think that thing got. So why?
Good question.
Okay. Not answerable, but yeah.
Sometimes you don't know why things get so popular.
But yeah.
Yeah, just two cute cats having fun together, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what the internet needs every now and then.
Yeah, but here's a question I was going to ask later. Maybe now's the time to ask. Almost to the point where it's sort of cliched or mocked or whatever. But the internet and social media and other stuff is just rife with cat videos and pictures and stuff. So why, what's the difference between somebody just putting up their cat video and it's like, that's cute and that's a cool looking cat and they're doing something cool, and something in the within the realm of Cole and Marmalade? How do you account for that? Is it just because you have a background as a videographer, just the caliber is that much better?
Maybe that adds to it. Yeah, just different camera angles and, the music and timing and editing.
So it's production values. So
that could be a part
versus
of it,
something I just throw up there with my iPhone.
Yeah.
What you do is like, okay, that's
plus, that works too. We always keep a camera close by in case the cats are doing something crazy.
Right, that you didn't expect.
Just those short clips.
Yeah.
But we've been doing it a long time too, six, 7 years.
So you're better and better at it. And obviously you were good at it from the get-go from the experience of Big Cat Rescue. So
We'll go with that, yeah.
Okay, I'm talking you into it apparently. All right, so anyway, everything's going great guns. They pretty much hit it off. Mm-hmm. And then Marmalade became ill.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that.
That was a shock. We moved to California in 2014. And
What took you there?
Just a change.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go to the West Coast for a bit, see how it was.
Okay.
After a couple of months, he started puking. He'd always been a puker. He'd always eat his food so fast. He's got a real good appetite.
Well, cats, it seems like they...
Yeah.
I mean, almost arbitrarily cats throw up, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if they're fine or supposedly fine otherwise, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so at first we thought it wasn't anything suspect, but then he started vomiting like nowhere near feeding time and was like, oh, this isn't normal. So took him in, got scanned. We originally thought he'd eaten something because he likes to eat plastic or anything.
Oh, wow.
We thought we'd messed up somehow, but no, it just... We found a tumor in his intestines.
Mm.
He had lymphoma, and that's when we found out that it was FIV positive as well.
And that's feline immunodeficiency virus. Yeah. Okay, all right.
A weakened immune system.
Okay, yeah, let's go with that, yeah.
It sounds really bad, but it really isn't that bad. Like, FIV positive cats can live just as long as FIV negative cats. But we've learned a lot in the past few years. That's how we found out, and he went through chemotherapy, a dozen rounds of chemo, and luckily we caught it early, and he's a young cat, so he was only two at the time, so he took it all in his stride and is good now.
Yeah, so if I'm not mistaken, once a cat has FIV, they don't get over it, but they maintain with it.
Yep.
So he has FIV, but will continue to be fine, and otherwise the other health issues are cool.
Yeah, they're all good.
Yeah.
He just actually had a dental cleaning yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. And let's talk about that let's talk about that specifically, but let's talk more broadly about perhaps related to that, how you really advocate for early teeth brushing with whoever the cat is.
Yeah, like I said, we've learned a lot in the past 6 or 7 years. I wish we'd known sooner to start a dental dental hygiene, you know, kind of schedule with the cats when they were kittens, but we didn't. But yeah, every day we brush their teeth or use a gel or dental wipes. So it's really, like, I forget the statistics, but I think it's 80% of cats 3 years or older have some sort of dental disease. So it's kind of crazy that obviously cats can hide their illnesses so well, and owners don't realize until it's too late, and then some can't afford to have annual dental cleanings. So it's really a big problem. Just people taking cats to the vets in general, people don't really take cats to the vets that often.
And it's stressful for both parties. And then also, if the teeth situation gets bad enough, then they have to usually be put under, right, to do a proper cleaning. And so you don't really want to put a cat under anesthesia if you could avoid it. So
it's always dangerous. But that's what Marmalade Dad done yesterday. He's got gingivitis, so every year he needs a good dental cleaning. He actually had 3 teeth removed yesterday.
It sounded like a rough day.
It was a bit loopy last night. He kind of still is this morning, but dental disease is a big thing and people don't realize until it's too late.
So how early are you saying that, as soon as, like, if you adopt a kit, like, start then? I mean, like, or what's a good time?
We just adopted 2 new kittens last year, Jug and Zigzag, and we got them used to, you know, just feeling around their mouths and putting your finger around the gum and just getting them used to that sensation. And then we've started introducing them to the brush and toothpaste and just, you know, a few seconds, done, give them a treat, give them some praise. Just got to build it up day by day, week by week, and they're getting better with it already. So
sure. So that's the key, really, is if they're kittens and they're not going to fight you on it, because it's like, hey, well, this is
they're
fun.
Still
and I get a
fight
treat.
You a bit.
But it sounds like fight me or don't fight me, but I got to do this because I know what's happening if I don't.
Tough love time.
Tough brush time. So all right, well, I'm sorry he had that kind of day yesterday, but sounds like he's on the mend.
He's kind of used to it now.
But it sounds like that's because of what happened. That's an annual thing to undergo, that, right?
Just got to do it every year just to keep on top of it, give us a good clean base to start from for the rest of the year.
For sure. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Chris Poole, the colleague of Cole and Marmalade, the black cat and orange tabby, who have become internet sensations. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And we are streaming this conversation on Facebook Live via my personal page. So just Duncan Strauss on Facebook if you're anywhere near some sort of device that would allow that. So one of the things we've kind of touched on, but I think probably, in my view, kind of helps account for the phenomenon, is that, the videos are great and fantastic, as we've discussed, and why, but there are a lot of important messages along the way: adopt, rescue, brush their teeth. So at what point did you feel like, hey, we want to make sure there's messaging as well as kind of cool, engaging videos?
Pretty much from the get-go, really, with the Adopt a Black Cat video.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, we've learned a lot in the past 6 or 7 years. You know, adoption, there's millions of cats and dogs euthanized every year. Spaying and neutering, that's the biggest thing that people just don't do. And it's so simple. And then most recently, my work with, you know, community cats, feral cats. I've got another YouTube channel, Catman Chris. I do a lot of rescue work.
Right.
You know, it's just, you've got to do your own part and, you know, work together, save more lives. That's as simple as it is.
But sometimes it even seems to go beyond that. Like, if you find out about a kind of a tough situation, then there'll be an effort to help raise money or encourage people to donate to help out. And again, because the following, that usually does generate some great response.
We're really lucky, like just recently with Logan, the werewolf cat we rescued.
Yeah, tell us about that, because I don't know how familiar I was with werewolf cats even before this happened.
I'd seen them before, but when we got the picture, I knew it was something unique. Like you said, we put the call out because he's got a lot of health issues that, you know, we rack up the vet bills pretty quickly. So that's just a cool thing about doing all this. It seems kind of crazy sat here on a radio show talking about my famous cats, but we can make a difference and we can raise funds for animals and organizations in need. So that's the cool part of it.
No, it's really, I think that really, there's just something about that, because it's like, I think for people that go to the Instagram page or the YouTube page or whatever, there's all kinds of fun stuff, and it's a great diversion from whatever people are going through during their workday or politically, national scene, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's just a great kind of tonic to just sort of give them a little spell, but the fact there is this messaging and these ways to help cats and or their humans in tough spots, I think that also accounts for why there's such a strong, enthusiastic, and large following.
Exactly. Yeah, we get messages every day from people like suffering from depression or anxiety, or they're in the hospital. So not only do we kind of get messages out there, you know, we just make people laugh. Like you said, it's like a bright spot in their day just to watch a new Cola Marmalade video or just laugh at a picture. So that's a good feeling too, just, you know, spreading joy in the world, I guess.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool that, on a related note, since we talked for a while about the work for Big Cat Rescue, that it did get to a point where you and your wife were able to sort of treat this as the whole coal and marmalade enterprise as indeed an enterprise. And so that's kind of really what your jobs are.
Yeah. It's not a bad gig.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Just kind of going with the flow for now and seeing how long I can do it for, you know. Yeah, it's a good thing. Make a living plus make a difference at the same time. So I'm just going with it.
Yeah. So I guess on the other hand, I would wonder, with the popularity and with people seeing that helping Logan, let's say, or other things, do you get besieged with requests to do other things? And then if so, like, how do you sort through, because you can't probably say yes to everything. So how do you sort of, what criteria do you use to say, okay, well, this situation, we're going to definitely give them the full Cola Marmalade push?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we get lots of requests, and we can't share every fundraiser that comes our way, just because our whole page would just be fundraiser posts. And
right, that's what I mean. So
switch off to it.
So how do you decide, well, okay, this we can see, this I feel bad saying no, but I can't do this one. I mean, what goes into that?
It's tough. Normally, yeah. If I'm like personally involved in kind of some sort of rescue and I know them, I've got no problem with sharing that stuff. But then if people who we've never met before come to us with a problem, we can also write stories for our website and then add a donation link in there somewhere.
Okay.
To tell the story,
right,
and then maybe help that way as well. But yeah, it's tough, and that more and more people are messaging me with requests for help with, you know, feral cats now as well. So I'm keeping busy.
Yeah.
And
it's
not a bad thing. Well, feral cats is a bad thing that need to be trapped and
neutered
and spayed, and kittens on the streets, but I'm doing as much as I can. And, you know, I'm getting a good network of people. I've been working with St. Francis here in Tampa, and they're just awesome. Every time I get a problem or a cat that needs help, I'm just texting on the phone.
Yeah. Well, I think the feeling's mutual, because I heard from someone associated with them and just was so thrilled that you were going to be on the show and just said a bunch of nice things about you. So we've kind of, in the last minute or two, I would say here, Chris. So, I mean, it just sounds like things have sort of just generally led to other things or broader things. Is there something kind of specific that's on the horizon or that you would hope to do next?
Not really. Like, the cat cafe was the idea I had when we moved back to Tampa.
Yeah.
But now...
And what happened with that, or what's the status of that?
Just not enough hours in the week to get...
to pursue it, you mean?
Yeah, we started making steps, but then we started fostering kittens and doing rescue work and just trying to run a small business too.
Yeah.
So I'm actually been in touch with two ladies, one who's opening the Sunshine Kitty Cafe in St. Pete.
Okay.
And then another lady opening the Barista Cats Cafe here in Tampa. So I decided we'd help those two with their cat cafes to get them going sooner rather than later. So it's all about just getting more cats adopted.
Sure.
So we can help them hopefully get some sponsors and raise awareness with cats that need to be adopted.
Yeah.
On our social pages. So we're going that way. And then I'm going to focus more on my own restaurant.
Right. Rather than try to launch your own cafe. And for people who may not be familiar, haven't seen one or been to one, you know, you can go get a cup of coffee, but there's cats roaming around. And they're not just any cats. They're cats that are available for adoption.
Yeah.
So you can hang out with a cat. Next thing you know, you might say, hey, I really like this one that I've been enjoying with my cappuccino.
Yeah.
And, or cattuccino, I guess, if I would try to keep up with the puns. But, and next thing you know, there's a love connection made, and that's another way for a cat to get adopted.
Yeah, it's really awesome, you know, business model. They can take the surplus animals from animal shelters or maybe cats in shelters that don't do well in that environment. It's just like a big living room, basically.
Yeah.
They socialize with people and oftentimes, you know, come out of their shell faster and get adopted faster.
Right, because they're around people all day. People are in and out having coffee or whatever they're having. And so it's
win-win.
I mean, because this is the idea of, even if you weren't necessarily, if you had like a house full of cats, I can't take one more, but still, just if you're going to have a cup of coffee somewhere, why not go have one where you can hang out with cats for that, you know, 20 minutes or whatever you're doing. So, well, that's cool. I guess the place to start for people who are just maybe getting familiar now, and it's funny, just as an example of how sort of potent the lure of the cola marmalade world is. Earlier this week, my wife just hadn't really been familiar with them until I said, this is what I'm going to do, and she saw my post or whatever. And then yesterday, I was in my office, but I got a text for her. She goes, I'm becoming slightly obsessed with cola marmalade. You know, just like in 2 days' time, she had become like a cola marmalade person. So anyways, but I guess the first place to go would be colaandmarmalade.com.
Yep.
And then that can refer you to
Facebook, YouTube, Instagram,
et cetera.
We're everywhere.
Yeah. No, you truly are. And again, if it adds up to 3 million, probably higher than that now, I'm guessing, but it's probably around that at least.
Over 3 million.
Yeah. So that's great. So we've been speaking with Chris Poole. And again, it's Cola and Marmalade, and we have their surrogates have been very quiet and very well behaved.
Yep. They were good in the car ride over as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. So that's good. So thank you so much, Chris, for making the time to join us on Talking Animals. And we'll keep an eye on everything that's going on those various social media platforms. And people that live in the area can go hang out at those cat cafes as well. So
yeah,
that's great.
Hopefully this year. Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you so much. So in a few moments here, I'll speak with Ornella Varchi of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about the organization's new shelter and the fundraising underway to build it right now. Though it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. I've been thinking a lot about Dana Gould for various reasons, so I thought we'd hear something from him right now. From an appearance on Conan, this is Dana Gould with a piece I'm calling Snakes and Alligators in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is absolutely
on WMNF.
True. It happened about 3 weeks ago in North Carolina. They had the big hurricane. There's a woman in her house. Her house is filling up with water, but she can't go outside to get help because the water outside the house was filled with snakes and alligators. Now, I'm not here to judge anybody. But if you're going to drown in your own home because the water outside is filled with snakes and alligators, you did something. Life is not that cruel. I'm sure the National Guard helicopter, go outside and we'll lower a ladder. I can't, the water is filled with snakes and alligators. Jeez, lady, what did you do? By the way, why are there alligators? Like, I understand that God made sunsets and rainbows. Do we really need a gorilla made of leather that lives in the swamp and wants you dead? But did he come up with a shark and think, oh, it can't chase you across a golf course. Hang on, I got another idea. Then he came up with a crocodile for the sole reason that you could be thinking you're eaten by an alligator and be wrong. You know it's a bad idea? Because it lives in the swamp. Alligators, crocodiles, what's a snake but a rope that hates you? Put in the swamp. Just put in the swamp. The swamp is God's porn drawer. All the creepy stuff, put in the swamp, cover it with a t-shirt. I'll deal with it later. Don't worry about it.
That was Dana Gould with a piece I've called Snakes and Alligators, taken from one of Dana's appearances on Conan. Now it's time to speak with Ornella Varchi of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about their plans for a new shelter and their corresponding plans to pay for the new shelter. So this is Ornella Varchi on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Ornella.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. And so first, although I think we've touched on this briefly on the show some time ago, for those who may not have heard that, talk a little bit about just what the overall new shelter or new building, I guess, maybe involves and what the features of it are, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely, yes. So for anybody that's familiar or has adopted or visited the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, just very briefly, our organization itself has been in this community for over 100 years, serving the community and the animals in this community. The current shelter building that we have has been around since the 60s. So as you can imagine, or anybody that has seen this shelter can know firsthand, the shelter's very outdated. Just last year alone, we helped almost 10,000 animals that were in need of new homes or just any other need that they needed walked through our shelter.
Wow.
So the shelter, the need has outgrown the current facility that we're in. And just the building itself, it doesn't have air conditioning in the kennels. So anybody living in Florida knows very well that that is just not a great condition to be in, especially during the summer.
Yeah.
When it rains, it floods. It's just a very, very outdated building, and this community and the animals in need in this community desperately need the new shelter. So we're very excited for this new shelter that's going to take us from just over 20,000 square feet to a little over 40,000 square feet.
Wow.
To serve this community and the animals in a much better capacity. We'll have air conditioning. We'll have isolation areas for sick and injured animals that come into us. We'll have nurseries for underage kittens and puppies. So it's going to just completely change the way that we serve this community.
Well, even before you get into the specific features and amenities, the fact that it's basically more than double the size of the current building, I mean, says a lot about just how that would change the services you could provide, but the number of animals that you could help.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Anybody that's adopted from us knows what wonderful animals that we have, and not just adopted. A lot of times we take in strays, so people, just like you and I, when we're driving down the street and we may see a stray, a lot of times our shelter is the first place they go to bring in the stray that they have found, or an injured animal that they have or have found, they go straight to us. So we really serve the community in a very important way and in a lot of different ways. And even for families that they find themselves in a situation they can no longer keep their pet, they know exactly where they can go to surrender their pet so that it can be rehomed and found a new forever home. So it serves a very, very important part in our community, and we truly do need the help of the community to help finish this last leg of fundraising that we need.
So tell us a little bit more about the projected timetable, Ornella, both in at least a perfect world, when the building would be built and completed, and what sort of fundraising effort in this final stage is sort of necessary to get that done.
Yes, absolutely. We hope to break ground in this spring. So in just a couple of months, mm-hmm. we hope to break ground. And the shelter will take about 14 ish months to complete. So
okay.
We truly hope next year we'll have the shelter completed. We do have $2 million left in fundraising, and this is where we look to the community to help us in what capacity they can. Maybe a small gift, maybe a larger gift, anything that they can do to help us finish the shelter.
A couple questions, Ornella. One is that while the new, that was 14 months or so, while the new building is being constructed, will the old building be fully functional in the meantime? In other words,
yes.
there won't be any downtime during that transition?
No.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Definitely going to be a little bit of moving and shifting around in
yeah.
the area that we have now, of course.
Right.
But we will be fully functional to still serve the community in all the capacities that we currently do now. So we will stay fully functioning. The new shelter will be built on the same property. But
yeah, that's what I thought, and that's why I wondered if there might be, even if it was unavoidable, any sort of downtime, but it sounds like there won't be.
No. It'll be, if you will, built it's on the same property, but kind of behind the current shelter, if you will.
Okay.
And once the new shelter goes up, then we'll tear down the current shelter, and that'll become the parking lot area. So we'll still stay fully functional. And then once the new building goes up, then we'll move everybody in and be even functioning in a greater capacity.
Cool. So I guess the key question is, if anybody listening here can help with any kind of gift of any size, what's the website or where do they go online if they're going to do it online to try to make that kind of gift?
They can go straight to Shelter Them, tampa.com, and they can find not just general donation opportunities for the building, but we also still have naming opportunities. So you can name a kennel or different rooms that we have available. You can put your family's name, your company name on it, or in the memory of a beloved pet. We still have lots of opportunities left.
Great. So it's shelterthem.tampa.com?
Shelterthemtampa.com.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got an extra dot in there that didn't belong. But so it's shelterthemtampa.com.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, Ornella, good luck. This sounds super exciting. And once this is all done and up and running, it sounds like it's just going to be a further way for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay to help just that many more animal friends and the humans that go with them. So that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Coming up at 11 on WNF, I believe we'll be hearing Tom Hartman, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint, with Nola Lele. And then at 1 p.m., again, Craig Kopp will be taking calls. This is your chance to ask some questions about what has happened with the Rob Lori being let go in recent days, and obviously, you know, tons and tons of people are concerned and upset and have questions. So Craig Kopp will be fielding those calls and presumably emails and texts, but primarily calls probably at 1 o'clock here on WNF Today. So, and then at 2 o'clock, I will, if you can believe it or not, be back guest hosting the All Souls edition of It's the Music. And again, one special feature of today's edition of Scott's show is that I'll be chatting for a few minutes by phone with Scott. So I'm looking forward to that and hearing his voice and seeing a little bit about how things are going for him these days. So meanwhile, as on this show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a DVD copy of Blackfish. And let's get into Name That Animal Tune right now. It is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And again, we'll get you, if you are the first to call in and correctly identify the animal song, you will get a DVD copy of Blackfish. So it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. If you can name that animal tune, we'll probably take your guess off the air. I will say that, as a further clue, this band was just in town a couple days ago. So, let's cover a quick couple of announcements. This Saturday, February 23rd, the Florida Voices for Animals annual Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction is happening. I believe can get tickets at the door. It's at the Northdale Recreation Center, 1550 Spring Pine Drive, from 3 to 8 p.m. So you can find out more by going to floridavoicesforanimals.org. Also, there will be a presentation lecture by Dr. Will Tuttle, author of the book The World Peace Diet, and he will deliver a talk about the hidden dimensions of our culture's food system. He's always great. So that's also this Saturday, February 23rd, from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at the South Shore Regional Library and Community Rooms, 15816 Beth Shields Way in Ruskin. So that's it for now. You have been listening to Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, and we'll be back next week again playing at least a part of the interview I conducted earlier this month with Temple Grandin that theater in Austin. This wasn't really expressly for the radio show, but I was able to persuade them to record it. We had, I think, a pretty good, interesting conversation. Of course, a lot of it's about autism, some's about animals, but it's still pretty compelling, I think. So I invite you to visit talkinganimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. Please like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. And you can also subscribe to our e-newsletter there. Get info about guests beforehand, a couple days beforehand, etc. So that's talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa.